Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to a bonus episode of HR Latte. I'm very excited to have my guest with me today, continuing my series on recruiters or talent management goes tech. We're talking with Stacey Harris this morning of Sierra Cedar. I always want to say Cedar Sierra. I don't know if that's a problem, Stacey, if other people do that, but I get a little bit dyslexic sometimes, so I want to make sure I say it right, Sierra Cedar. And we're going to dive into the importance of surveys, why it's important to HR that these surveys exist, and why human resource professionals and folks that work in talent management should respond to these surveys and participate. So without further ado, Stacey, thanks so much for joining me today on this special edition of HR Latte.
Thank you, Ray, and I appreciate it. And I'm really excited to join your audience and share as much information as I can. And do not worry one bit about the name issue. The company actually changed its name from Cedar Crestone a year and a half ago, right when I joined, to Sierra Cedar, and I've been messing it up all the way along. It's a beautiful name. It evokes sort of trees and the mountains and everything, but it is definitely a harder name to mention, so no problem at all.
Well, I just want to make sure
I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, so if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, Stacey. I know that you've been an analyst, an HR technology analyst for tech and for the human resource industry for quite a while. So if you could give us a little background about yourself, and then please tell us about Sierra Cedar.
Yeah, I've been in this industry as an analyst, I guess probably going on a little, not quite 10 years yet. I'm almost there. I started out working with an organization many of your listeners might know, Burson & Associates, and spent 5 years there with Josh. I came in as the 13th employee, lucky 13, right? And was really, really lucky to grow with that organization and move into taking on their HR research practices and launching that. Worked with a lot of very wonderful team members and colleagues who have now gone on to other areas and other organizations as well. And then I spent 2 years at Brandon Hall Group, which was another small research firm, launching sort of them out of the learning space into talent management and initially HR. And then I was lucky enough last year to be asked by Lexi Martin, who many people might know, who has been a staple in the HR technology industry for over 17, 18 years because of the work she's done with the annual, what was then Cedar Crestone HR Technology Survey and is now Sierra Cedar Technology Survey. The thing to know probably most about Sierra Cedar is that they are a management consulting firm. They are an organization that a little over 900 employees now, do a lot of work in the healthcare, higher education space as well as commercial space. The nicest thing about the organization, though, is it is a group of really seasoned consultants who have worked in multiple large organizations who all sort of come together to work in this industry. And Cal, who was our CEO, has really been fabulous since I've joined the organization in continuing to support the work that Lexi has done for 17 years. So they've always done this annual HR technology survey as a service to the industry. It does provide insight to our own clients. It provides insights to other organizations as well. And it provides insights to the vendors and the market as a whole. And Cal thinks it's a wonderful service to the community. He wants to continue to do it as long as we're able to. So that's a little bit about our organization.
And Stacey, did you start off as a practitioner in the space, or how did you end up in the analyst field?
Yeah, that is it. I definitely did. I started out as a practitioner. I worked in organizations that were in financial as well as sales and marketing and franchised and then retail. It started in the ODOE space, so some of you might know, organizational design, organizational development, and organizational effectiveness role, that role that was sat between sort of learning and talent and HR. Moved my way up into senior leadership roles in a couple of organizations. The last corporate job I had before I moved into the analyst space was at Joann Stores. Some of you might know that.
Yes.
It's a big place where you do crafting and fabric. So if you live anywhere where you enjoy that kind of work, you definitely have probably visited that store. Spent many years there, really enjoyed the work. But I was lucky enough to Josh to join his team, so I was able to take all that practitioner insight and experience and turn it into analyst work. So,
Yeah, I love Joann's. That's good to know. I actually, I'm one of those people that end up doing what most people do at Target. When you go in for one or two things and you come out with way too many. That's what I do at Joann's. I love sewing and crafts and all that kind of stuff. So that's good to know.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. Yeah.
Good. Well, we're really happy to have you here today. Again, listeners, I'm talking to Stacy Harris of Sierra Cedar. We're going to talk about the Sierra Cedar HR System Survey, why surveys are important, why HR professionals and practitioners in talent management should pay attention to surveys and listen in to what those analysts are saying out there. You can follow Stacy at Stacy Harris HR, and Stacy does have an E in it, so it's Stacey Harris HR. So thanks again for being here today. Let's kick it off, Stacy, and talk about Sierra Cedar in particular. You've had opportunities at other analyst firms and consulting organizations. So why take the job at Sierra Cedar? And then if you could shift from that and tell us a little bit about what problems do analysts solve for HR and talent management?
Yeah, the analyst role is always a bit of a tricky role. I think it's been so much shrouded in mystery sometimes, right, depending on which organization and what the role is. But so I'll start out by saying why I chose to work with Sierra Cedar, and then I'll sort of go into, I think, the differences between various analysts in the market. And I've had a lot of conversation with other analysts around this topic because we're often trying to figure out, you know, how do we define our roles, right? I was very intrigued with being able to do research in an organization that was purely doing it for thought leadership. I had worked this last several years in wonderful organizations who had moved the market forward with their own thought leadership, but were oftentimes sort of hampered by basically how much funding they had to do the research. I mean, and no matter what you're doing when you're in a research industry, you're always struggling to figure out how you're going to sort of basically pay for the research, and usually you pay for it through either a couple of models. You either pay for it through membership models, which is definitely a great way to do it because you're getting a lot of practitioner input. Sometimes you're paying for it through consulting projects that are based off of that research, right? So you're taking that research and you're extending it into consulting work. And then oftentimes you're also paying for it through what we'd call vendor support, but the vendors are paying for it, and usually the really good research firms are getting multiple vendors to support multiple reports so that you're being as objective as possible in the research. And I think every analyst tries to be objective, right? But any one of those forms of sort of revenue generation can be a struggle if you're not balanced in how you're doing it, right, for independent research firms. But, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to make sure the lights are on or you can't do the research. So I think
right.
For me, what I was most excited about Sierra Cedar is that they, you know, basically said, we're investing in research. It's part of our organization, and we're doing it, yes, but they don't do a lot of consulting off of it. It's not a big part of their work that they do. They do a lot more managed hosting and integration work and those type of things. What they really use it for is brand recognition. And that was the first time I'd sort of been to an organization that was looking at it as a brand recognition tool. And they said, from that perspective, it's a value to us, but we know it's also a value to the industry, and we want to get the right person to lead it, someone like Lexi, who has a passion for the research and not just for, you know, writing or not just for doing, you know, more marketing and those type of things. We want someone who really understands research. And so when they, you know, told that story to me, I said, well, that I'm all in. The other thing that was exciting about Sierra Cedar is that it had 17 years of research data behind it. Lexi, you know, always laughs when I tell the story, but when she first started telling me about, you know, how many years she had been tracking shared services, it was before people called it shared services, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's data in her survey that goes back so many years that can actually help us shape and inform how the cycles are working for organizations. And so we're just starting to get to the point where we're able to get some of the data that Lexi's gathered over 17 years into our systems to do general analysis, some new systems that we've purchased. And we're hoping in the next year or two to be able to share some of those cycles with people so they can start to see how people have made decisions with HR technology over the last 10 years and how that might impact the decisions they're going to make in the future as well. So those,
That's
I think, are the really important, you know, elements to understand about how research is done and why I really appreciate what I'm doing at Sierra Cedar.
There's so much value.
Did you want to answer a little bit more about the, yeah, do you want me to answer a little bit more about the analyst role too? I apologize. I think there was two questions in there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a tack on to that, which would be, does it take a, and you can answer this in your response to the analyst role. Does it take a special kind of mind to do this kind of research, or any kind of research for that matter? You know, some of us are, you know, when we talk about A type personalities, B, you know, are we extroverted? Are we introverted? Do we think more or do we feel more? All those different aspects of personalities and how we learn and how we study. Is it a different kind of mind for an analyst, for a researcher?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question, because whenever we try and hire new analysts, that's always the hardest part when you're working in a research firm, right? Anybody, Josh, you know, other people who run other analyst firms can tell you that's
right.
The biggest struggle. What we basically, generally it comes down to is that a research analyst, whether it's HR technology or HR processes or recruiting systems or, you know, any research area that you're going to do in the HR space or any other industry, you really need sort of four different things. You need to be able to analyze data and gather data, and those skill sets are very detail oriented, right? You have to sort of know how to ask the questions, how to get the questions, how to look at data, how to compare it to market sizing, those type of things. You also need to be able to tell stories. You need to understand how to weave that information that comes back into a story that's valuable to the market. And then you also have to be able to write very effectively, because if you can't sort of tell the story verbally and then write it down initially, then basically you've lost something in the translation. So you have to be able to write it very effectively in some format. And then the final thing is you have to be really strategic in how you look at the market around you, because you're always looking for the future as well as what's happening behind you. It's a really sort of weird role where you have to keep an eye and a foot in what's really happening and grounded, and then you also have to keep a foot in where everything's going in the future. So that means someone who sort of has to be able to look backwards and forward at the same time. And that's a tough thing to fill, right? Someone who has all those skills, is personable, can connect with a community, and, you know, is interested in sort of having a voice in the market, right? There's a little bit of ego and definitely a little bit of narcissism inside this role, I will honestly say. Everybody who knows us knows that there's a, we you know, there's different types of analysts for groups, and we're all sort of, we have our issues, right? On a positive and positive side, usually. What the challenge is that you get, there's spectrums of all of those things I just talked about, right? There are some analysts
right.
who are really good at the data crunching and really good at the data analysis, but they can't tell the stories effectively, so they're very sort of, it's a little bit harder for them to connect with the community, but they've got amazing data, right? There's some analysts who are really good at the stories, but they don't really understand how to use the data. Sometimes they have people who support them, so it works very well, so that's where you come in with the team. And then there's some analysts who sort of fall in the middle, right? But I think there's also different types of analyst firms that those people gravitate to, right? So if you're in an analyst firm where there's a lot about brand or a lot about presenting or a lot about sharing the story, then you're going to probably gravitate to a firm that's definitely focused on what's happening in the vendor community, to what's happening in the space around, you know, the different events and conferences. If you were an analyst who's more data-driven and who's more interested in sort of telling that story from a data perspective, oftentimes you'll run to an analyst firm that does more through the written word or through, you know, membership models or those type of things, right? And those analysts probably tend to go on different spectrums there.
It sounds like, can you write a good word math problem? Or can you, you know, it needs to be understandable. You know, it's one of the, when you look back on your childhood when you're learning math, it's like, oh, no, word problems. No. But you really need somebody that can actually tell that story, as you have suggested. So as we look forward, and you're conducting a survey right now, and I would love for you to give us a little bit of background about the survey, why it's important, why you have invested, your organization has invested the time, the expense, you know, the strain and stress that goes along with gathering data, and what you hope to see out of it, how the organization and the industry will benefit.
Yeah, definitely. So Sierra Cedar, the annual HR technology survey, has been around, like as I said, for 17 years, and it has morphed over time, as most research does in the market, right? If you're doing really good research, then you're rethinking your research model every year, right?
Right.
So I think probably the biggest difference between our research and maybe other research groups, right, that I've been in previously is that this is, we've picked a focus area, right? We've said we're going to try and understand what organizations are doing with their HR technology environments. And from that, we want to understand all the things that drive HR technology decisions and selections and how those decisions and selections impact the organization as a whole. So we do a once-a-year annual survey. That data, it is truly, to be honest, one of the largest surveys in the market. Anybody who does survey work in the market would tell you we break every rule in the book when we do our survey. It's too long.
Good.
It asks too many questions. It asks people to give not only details about what they're doing now, but what they plan to do in the future, right? But the reason we're able to do such great analysis is because Lexi has built this model up that I think actually resonates with the industry. And so what we're looking for is, we are looking for that snapshot in time. We do it annually. And so we're looking at things like, what are your HR system strategies, as well as what core HRMS payroll systems are you adopting, what talent management systems are you adopting, what recruiting systems are you adopting, what BI and analytics systems are you adopting, as well as what emerging technologies are you adopting. And then we ask questions about how they're being integrated, how they're being implemented. And because I ask all those questions that I know, and we also gather data separately, our own group does research on their financials, how big the organization is, the regional reach, those type of things. We gather that data separately from what's shared with us in the survey through public information. We're able to analyze all that data, stop shop, and say, look, there are some things that have an impact on each other. So we do a lot of correlations. And correlations are basically looking at if one thing goes up in a research effort. So, for example, one of the correlations that we found last year is that those organizations who showed that they were doing more BI and analytics, had higher levels of maturity in BI and analytic processes, also had more data sources in their analysis process, and also provided managers with more technology and data in their hands, right? Those organizations were outperforming all other organizations in our research from a financial perspective. That's a correlation,
that's
not causation. One could be causing the other.
Right.
But if we see that many years, you know, down the road as well, so we're able to see this maybe 2, 3, 4 years, we can start to say there is a connection here that's tighter than what most people are thinking. So that's one of the things I think that's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great purpose behind it. Now, are you taking respondents, so people who come in and do the survey, participate in the survey, are you taking them from anywhere? It's not just from clients?
Yeah,
it's anybody that works in talent management or talent acquisition, they can come in and take the survey.
Exactly. I mean, anyone who participates, we look for the person who's really that manager, director, senior VP who is working in any capacity and making decisions, selections, or maintenance decisions around HR technology. The nice thing about the survey this year, some updates that we've made is that it allows you to skip sections. So, for example, I know you guys are targeting a recruiting community with this group of series that you're doing this year, or this month anyways, for the radio show. What basically
right.
someone can do is they can come into the survey as a recruiting leader, right, who is trying to make decisions about HR technology, take just the sections that apply to them, skip to the end, and basically get everyone who takes the survey gets a report out of how their data compares to either last year's data by industry, size, or region. So you don't have to know everything in your company to take the survey.
Okay, that's great. So this is the 18th edition. You've been doing it for 18 years, is that correct?
Yep. This will be the 18th
okay.
year.
Okay, 18th year. You can go to Sierra Cedar 2015-2016 HR Systems Survey. Anybody who wants to, you can just Google that. Obviously, you can go to the Sierra Cedar website and find it from there, too. This is such a valuable insightful information that is gathered that benefits our industry. So I encourage anybody. If somebody were to sit down and do the full survey from beginning to end, Stacey, how long would it take?
For small organizations who have less technology in place, on average, it takes somewhere between 20 to 35 minutes. We find that they take. For someone who has a large, going to be a bit longer. But generally, what we see is those organizations usually make it a team effort. So maybe one or two people will answer different sections, and they can forward sections on in the survey. So.
So I want to dive into your expertise, somebody who has been researching and analyzing HR technology, somebody who has had in the forefront of the work that they do an idea to benefit human resources. So taking a look at talent acquisition, talent management, and how important it is to select the right vendor, right, for this organization. Because one thing that has come out of this series the most is that when we select technology, it either benefits us greatly if we've been trained well and we use it and we understand and have a great relationship with the vendor, or it just brings more issues and more problems to the table and to the department. So if you have any advice on what a talent management or talent acquisition professional should remember when selecting a talent management, talent acquisition technology vendor. What should they remember?
Oh, I think this is a great question. I think what I've seen is that there's really sort of three big things that organizations need to remember. So first is when they first start doing their research. Research is a valuable tool. So I'm talking research like my kind of research or organizations like Brandon Helpers and Associates, IDC, Gartner, all of those, right, have valuable tools that you can leverage. I always tell people to look at that research with the eye towards how and in what context was it designed to be a valuable tool, right? So each organization does research a little bit differently. And so, for example, when we look at our technology, talent management, talent recruiting, and we show our stats about what level of organizations are adopting technology today and what plan to adopt in the future. And we do show vendor data in our analysis, and we also do user customer satisfaction data in our analysis, right? But we're looking at adoption rates, and adoption rates come from our survey respondents. And so our survey respondents are wide. We make sure that it's statistically sound, that it's not coming from any one source too much, right? But what we really are looking at is that, you know, if someone has a system today, what do they plan to have in 12 months and next 36 months? So what's the adoption rate for those, right? And other system research, maybe you look at market share size. Market share size, if you're looking at market share size, you're going to get a much different picture than you're going to get from adoption. And both are important things to look at. Market share size, you're going to see the really big guys are always going to be on top. They have the most organizations, right? Other organizations are looking at things like features and functions, right? Who has the most features and functions? Who has the most capabilities? And that's a great context to look to. And then there's other vendor or research firms out there who are looking at, based off of the type of organization, which vendors might be better in certain situations. So they're doing use cases along with it. Every one of those research tools are valuable for you to look at when you're first doing your research, but make sure you're looking at them from that context, right? So if someone says someone's a market leader, make sure you know, is that in market size? Is that in how they meet an industry needs? Is that features and functions? Or is that how maybe they meet someone who's like me, who's in my category, my region, my industry, my size, right? Because that's really important when you're making decisions about HR technology. The other thing then is that once you've done your research, you've gotten your short list, is to remember that if, particularly I think this is important for anybody working moving from on-premise solutions, cloud solutions, is that the cloud environment is a little different than the on-premise environment. And I think talent management and recruiting environments, we've been working in the cloud for a lot longer than, say, core HRMS, but not everybody has. And so I often tell people that when you're making a selection in the cloud, you really need to bring the vendors in more quickly to have conversations with them, because they start with their best practices, and you really want to decide through use cases which of those best practices best meet where your starting point or requirements are. Because if you try and customize a cloud solution, you're just going to be unhappy all the way through, right? Because you can't customize it. You can only configure it. And so we always tell people to really start with the vendor analysis much earlier versus going through a big list of requirements figure out your top big five or six use cases and start with the vendors much more quickly in that conversation.
So to that,
that
would
be my
great advice.
Big things, yeah.
Yeah, that is really good advice. And I want to address the difference between, because maybe people don't understand this, the difference between configurable and customizable. Can you just give us a short, brief definition?
Yeah. So, you know, and I think in the recruiting space or the talent management space, we know at the very least that in talent management, about 50% of organizations from our survey already have what we consider a cloud-based solution in place, right? And that number was supposed to hit 75 by this year. I don't know if it'll actually get that high, but it's pretty much people are sort of have been moving that direction predominantly. But if you're using an on-premise environment, and many people still are. A large swath of the market still is using on-premise solutions. Yes, exactly. For particularly if they're using a PeopleSoft or an SAP HCM, right, that they've really been customized to their organization. So what we're saying by customization means you're actually going in and changing the code at sort of a code level. So that means that you have someone in your organization who goes in and there are areas within the PeopleSoft and the SAP HCM technology where they can write a little program that fundamentally changes what the out-of-the-box core HRMS or payroll solution or recruiting or talent management solution was meant to do, right? You've added extra fields. Maybe you've made a new whole new functionality that now starts to look at not just candidates who are available today, but maybe candidates who will be available in a year. So you needed to ask a different set of questions. So you needed to add a whole separate area where you were asking questions about that type of candidate, right? And all of that is customizable, right? And sometimes there's bolt-ons, so you're customizing a whole new program that then is just sort of connected through a series of fields that are feeding data back and forth. When you're getting to a cloud-based system and you're doing configuration means that you're not actually going in and programming any language. You're not doing any JavaScripting or any type of system like that. What you're going in and doing is you are making selections that the solution will allow you to make, which means there's a series of buttons or a list of things that you can select. So I want 10 fields versus 15 fields. I want the workflow to go from they're going to first go to the manager's questions, and then it's going to go to the HR questions, right? Those are a series of workflows that you can create. And a really good cloud solution has a lot of configuration, sometimes almost too much configuration, depending on which system you're using. And so you have to understand what workflow you want to have in place. Usually they'll come out of the box with some best practice setups,
right,
but you oftentimes
right.
want to be able to configure things. So. Does that explanation work
yeah.
a little bit?
Absolutely. I just want to make sure our audience understands the difference because some of them have never even looked at on-prem, right? Some of them are new within the last 5 to 10 years and are unfamiliar with on-prem technology. So I just want to make sure there's an understanding, a general understanding of the difference between the two. So I knew that we would run out of time way too quickly. Can you hang around for a little bit longer?
I can, yeah, definitely. Someone has me.
Okay.
If you have any some additional
good.
Questions, yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple more things that I want to talk about. One of the things that we've talked about in this series, because it has been about HR or recruiting professionals that have left the practitioner world and moved into launching a technology based on an idea they've had or based on the fact that they really like what a company provides. There are many folks that work. I've worked in HR technology for the last 6 years and was a practitioner, but I moved to technology. What I've been calling it in this series is the dark side, because as a practitioner, sometimes you feel like the vendor side is the dark side, right? The way that they approach you, the way they try to sell you, the way, you know, instead of coming to you as, I have something that will help you and benefit you, it's more like, what can you buy from me? Right. So I'm trying to make a shift and help everybody understand there is our best practices in how we sell software, not just how we create it and how we produce it and share it. Right. So when you think about, and you've probably talked to many, many new tech companies out there, have helped them, have consulted with them, have listened to them. When you talk to them, when you talk to folks like Kelly Robinson, who launched Broadbean Technology, like Rayanne Thorne, who now works for Dovetail, What is some advice that you can give to individuals who are deciding to move from the practitioner side into the vendor side, and they have an idea and they want to launch a company? Are there things that you can share that are important that they need to remember when launching or moving into the vendor side?
I think, you know, and I get to see a lot of vendors from a briefing analyst perspective, right? So analysts not only do research with all the practitioners, right, that we do surveys, those type of things, but we also spend an inordinate amount of our time briefing vendors, looking at vendor products, reviewing
right.
vendor products, and talking to a lot of the vendors. And what I'd say is that there's two things, is that I have found that the technologies that the businesses is a better way to put it, that generally do the best in this space, right, are not just trying to solve a single solution, are not just trying to make a better mousetrap, right? They are organizations that are led by people who are trying to make a change in the industry, right? They have a complete different perspective about how you can do things differently for employees or for contingent workforces or for the workforce as a whole, right? And so I'd really say
right.
that, you know, if you think you have experience, be sure to not focus on a specific process or an area that only you know, right? Make sure you're well-rounded enough with the insights and information that you have at your fingertips. Do your research and understand what you want to change in the industry as a whole, because that gives you more drive, more passion. It makes sure that the solutions that you're putting together have a much longer-term vision. The hardest thing for me to do as an analyst is to sit and listen to someone show me a really good individual product and I not be able to sort of see where they want to take this down the road, because that makes it harder for me to recommend it to someone.
Great. That's really important. Why do you think new companies, new technology companies, in particular in the HR tech world, why do you think they fail?
I think most of the time what we generally see as analyst firms is that they fail. There's a number of reasons why organizations fail, so I can't say that there's any one particular reason. I'd say, you know, managing your finances is a big part of it. You can't underestimate the need to balance the need for sales, marketing, and operations efficiency, right? Because products need to develop, things need to be sold, and you need to market, and you need to balance that very carefully. And most of the time, I think they fail because they haven't figured out how to balance that. And my recommendation is get as many advisors, get as many people who are not just excited about you and your product, but who also know business to help you with those questions. The other reason I think organizations generally fail, or they don't grow, right? There's two answers. You know, there's
right.
a lot of good businesses
right.
out there who do, you know, you're going to be fine doing, you know, $10 million for a very long time, right? But the organizations who have
right.
grown the fastest, I think, in our market are those organizations who had leaders who were engaging and passionate about not just the market, but the people they're working with, right? So they were excited about the vision the organization was heading towards, and they basically make sure that everybody in their company was connected with that vision. Really good technical, really good products are great tools, right? And they can go a long way in a business, but really strong leadership, particularly at the executive level, with passion, I think, if you look at all those organizations that are still standing in a talent management space and a recruiting space that has gone through lots of changes today, the people with passion are the ones who made the biggest impact, I think. So.
And that is what we're finding. The folks that really have a passion for launching a company, a passion and understanding for the industry, and those that don't give up. It seems to be the common answer
yeah.
is tenacity pays off in the end. So is there is there anything that a vendor or a practitioner, one side or the other, should look for in a analyst relationship? If somebody comes to CEDAR and wants to, is this the right organization for me to go to find out information about selecting technology as a practitioner? What should they look for?
So I think analysts, you know, and I've worked with almost all the analysts in one format or another, and we actually travel, many of the analysts would say that we're better friends with each other and sometimes than we are with the colleagues in our companies, because oftentimes we're sort of a unique subset of people, right, in this, you know,
right.
companies that do this work. what I would say is that when you're really looking at analysts, I think it's very similar to the vendor conversation. Decide what you need, and I think that will drive to tell you what kind of analyst you're looking for, because I think there's no wrong analyst out there, but I think there are analysts who may not fit what you're trying to achieve, right? So if you're an organization that has a pretty good idea of the type of vendors you generally work with, the type of technologies you generally work with, and really what you need is just some general guidance on how to best approach those various vendors, right, then you might want to look at the big analyst firms and really think about the fact that they're going to give you some insight on how to maybe rank and stack sort of the top 3, 4, or 5, right, that are always going to be in that target area. If you're someone who has an organization that's really looking at some of the newer technologies or who wants to be a little bit more innovative in their approach to HR technologies, you might want to look at some of the independent firms, because oftentimes they're the ones that are paying a little bit more attention to the smaller, newer technologies in the space, right? Then also I think the other thing is really looking at analysts from the term of, are they helping make you better? And in my 10 cents, right, that is when I used to, you know, Josh and I used to have this conversation all the time, is that we were like the wizard behind the machine, right? If that company knew it was the analyst firm, then we were probably not doing our job right, right? If I needed to get in front of every senior leader in your company, then, you know, that's not really as exciting as I'm giving you the data, the information you need to be the HR hero. And that's really what you need to be, right? Because you need to be at the table with all the right information and data.
Right.
So for me, that's always a big guiding factor. Yeah.
Well, it's been so great to have you on the show. I this is a question that I ask almost every guest that comes to HR Latte and has a talent management every morning. What are some key things that you do personally, Stacey? Okay, let's separate you from your organization. Let's separate you from the actual work that you do. But what are some things that you do personally for yourself, for your clients, for your colleagues, that ensure that you do your job more effectively, more efficiently? One of the things that has been driving me for years is that there is always a better way to do my job, no matter what my job is. There's always a better way for me to be a mom, a better way for me to be a wife. You know, there are certain things that I can do better. And so I'm consistently trying to find those things. If you could share with us maybe 1 to 3 different things that you do on a regular basis that helps you keep that in the forefront of your mind. How can I do my job more effectively, more efficiently?
That's a wonderful question. I am a mother as well, and I am a wife who has a wonderful husband who spends a lot of time helping me be better at who I am. So I'm very lucky and very blessed to have a very strong support structure in my life, right? And I think the one thing I know that I probably don't do nearly as much, but I think is really important is to make sure that you are leveraging your support structure, and that includes friends and family and your network and colleagues as well, in a way that makes them feel like you appreciate what they're doing for you and that you need them. I think oftentimes we're so busy being busy, we're so busy being, you know, good at what we do, that we forget to tell people we need them. We need their help. We need their support, and we appreciate it when they give it to us. So I think for me, that's a big thing about, I've had to learn that, particularly this year due to some things going on in my personal family life. And I think that's an important thing, that if anybody is really thinking about how they can help themselves, is to remember that people like to be needed. That's your colleagues, your friends,
that's
your
right.
employees, the people that you're working with, right? The
yourself,
other thing I think for me,
I was just saying your spouse. Yeah. I am, because I am so prideful and independent, it helps me to hear that from somebody else, because I have to consistently remind myself, hey, let go of some things. He can help you, you know, your spouse, your partner can help you every once in a while, and just ask for help when you need it. And they like to help. It's amazing.
Exactly. It's amazing how much I think you will find that your relationships with people will change when you stop trying to do everything yourself and you start asking for help.
Yeah.
And that, and your spouse, I think, and even your kids, right? I think, you know, particularly us super moms, right? We try and be, you know, get them everywhere,
everything.
Do everything, make sure. And you know what? the best thing that's happened to our family recently and is that my husband recently went through some health issues, and I turned to my 16-year-old, my 21-year-old, and I said, look, guys, I need your help. I can't do this anymore. And both of them turned around, picked up, and said, Mom, we just didn't know. And, you know, those are the kind of things that make such a difference in your life and your family's, because they wanted to help. They just didn't know how. And so
that's a great story.
Those are things that I think that are very meaningful. And your colleagues are the same way. They just don't know how oftentimes.
Yeah.
So to me, that's if, you know, if you're, you know, audience leans with that one thing, I think, you know, there's all kinds of technology and ways to make your life easier and other things, but just asking for help, I think, is the biggest thing that people can do these days.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's such an important lesson that we probably need to continually learn. I think especially, and, you know, there's a lot of harping going on about women and, you know, the rights of women and equality and all these different things. And we've kind of put ourselves in this position, right? By wanting and demanding equality, by wanting independence, by wanting to feel like we can do it all. Like we are super women, we are super moms, super wives, super whatever, you know, we can put that in front of anything that we are and what we do in life. And it's so important to remember that, look, if you want a true partnership, whether it's with a colleague or a partner, a spouse, in your personal life, you have to let go of some of that and act not so independent and be a little bit more needy yourself and then respond to their neediness as well. And being needy has such a negative connotation these days because of where we have moved forward and how women want to be viewed as strong and independent and everything. And I just have to remind myself all the time, look, he needs to hear that. You need to hear this. So just let go. Put the wall down, you know. And it's such an important lesson.
Yes.
Listen to learn.
Yeah. No, I agree completely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. One of the things that I like to ask at the end is if you have any last words of wisdom. Some people share quotes. Some people say, you know, just share their daily mantra that they have. So if there's any last words that you could share with us, and then we'll hit the quick hit phase, which is my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, no, the only last word of wisdom is, and it probably is just to remind people that the talent in front of you is a great opportunity for you to be a coach and a mentor in every format. So think about the people around you and think about how you can coach and mentor them, because that's the world that we live in, and everybody needs a coach and mentor. And so that would be my last words of wisdom, is to remember that people in front of you are looking for insight and guidance, and it's a great way to connect with people.
I love that. One of the new things that we're hearing a lot more about in employee engagement is the reverse mentoring. You know, let's pair up different generations, different people let's really dive into those cross-functional teams and make sure that we're learning from each other and talking to each other. So that's great wisdom to share.
My best relationships are based off of that kind of reverse mentoring model, and the I coach, they coach. You know, we both learn something from each other. Yeah, definitely.
That's wonderful. Okay, quick hit faves. And this is why I call this my selfish part of the show, because I always learn about new foods, new places to go, great new books. I'm always frantically writing notes, or you'll hear my keyboard typing frantically. So, and it just did say 90 seconds, but we have time. It'll go on. So those of you that are listening, you'll probably be cut off in this, but you can listen to it on demand. So your favorite food.
So my favorite food is ice cream. I had to really think about this, but I don't know that I have anything exciting to tell you about gelato. And particularly, we have a great place here that does homemade sort of gelato ice cream mix sort of type of stuff here in the North Carolina area. And I don't really have a favorite book that's probably that anyone else would sort of know. I have a series of that you'd have to look up and find someplace in a library called The World's 1,000 Best Poems. It was written in 1872. But it has pullouts from the Bible, the Quran, the Edgar Allan Poe. It's the best thing. My grandmother passed it down to me from my grandfather. And so I'm not a, you know, I read a lot of new books and stuff too, but to me that's my go-to book thing. So, but I had to think, I'm laughing when I think about this. I think it's 1892 or 1872. I'd have to go in and actually look. But it's a fairly,
awesome.
It's an old book, yeah. So,
I love that. Definitely have to look that one up.
But to me,
Favorite place?
It has definitely, yeah, favorite place. That there's really only one place that I could think of here was there's a little park, state park in Ohio where I grew up in Mansfield called Mohegan State Park. If you ever get to Ohio and you're in the middle of the state and you really want to see one of the most amazing parks in the, I think really in the state, it's got covered bridges and streams and trails, and in the middle of the fall, it probably has the most beautiful colors you've ever seen. So to me, that's my favorite place. So
I love that. I love when people share things like that that are off the beaten path that not everybody knows about. Thank you. And last but not least, your favorite thing to do.
This one was, my favorite thing to do probably is to sit around with my family and just laugh and have a conversation about old stories. We do a lot of that. We're not big runners or bikers or anything like that, or we don't do a lot of eating out, those type of things. We do a lot of cookouts. Everybody bring over, you know, Sunday meals and just sit around and talk and have fun. So that's probably my favorite thing to do. So
I love that. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Stacey. Thank you so much for joining us today on HR Latte as we continue this series. This has been my best series so far. We've got 10 different episodes as part of this series. So I appreciate you joining us on this. And I know that you jumped on last minute. We just talked about this last week. So it's great to have you here today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Congratulations on the wonderful series you've done here, Anne. It's amazing work. I know how hard this work is. So congratulations to you. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Stacey. And folks, those listening in, please tune in next week. We'll be continuing the series as we talk with Mira Greenland, who was a former practitioner who now is a very successful head of sales for Tweet My Jobs. If you're unfamiliar, please check out that organization. And then we'll be talking with Matt Tant, former recruiter who has just launched his own HR technology company called Reload, R-E-L-O-D-E. And it is an online recruiter matching tool. It's awesome. So join us next week as we continue this series, Recruiters Talent Management Goes Tech.